Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Burden of Leadership podcast. I'm Paul Tanakin. Fellas, how we doing?
Excellent. Tamian Dysart.
Vani Hariri.
Another episode.
Yeah.
And we've covered a lot this season so far.
Yeah.
But one topic I'm excited to dive into today is we're going to just talk about how do you manage growth, even sometimes when growth is not something you want. A lot of times business leaders think, well, we want our business to grow. I want my company to grow. Mm-hmm. I want my city to grow. But sometimes that growth can happen too quickly. Mm-hmm. You can have too much growth. There's challenges that come with that. And I think back to before I was in office 6 years ago. So I've been in office about 6 years. Before that, I had my own business with 35 employees. And there was 1 year when we were growing so quickly that I remember pulling the leadership team together and saying, hey, our goal for this year should just be not to grow at all. Like, I just don't want to grow anymore because we got a lot of things we have to figure out before we keep growing. And I have people who will come up to me right now and they say, I miss Sioux Falls when it was 150,000 or when it was only 70,000 and, you know, we're 210,000 now. And I'm like, well, we can't stop growing. Yeah. And the only way you stop growing, I think we said this on a previous episode, is make a city that's terrible, that no one wants to live in anymore. That's how you stop growing a city. So it's like, well, considering the alternative, I don't think we're going to do that. But how do we manage the challenges of growth? So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. Well, and even to that point, like, cities don't stop growing. They die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like they get to say, all right, we're stopping here and it's going to be good again. Nah, you start losing the wrong people. Yeah. You start losing the wrong attitudes. You know what I mean? And the things that make a city challenging to live in are almost always the things that stay. Those are the things that don't leave.
Well, we deal with that in South Dakota right now. I mean, we use the term brain drain a lot and all this stuff, but Sioux Falls is obviously growing. Berkeley, South Dakota is growing, Rapid City, South. But a lot of our rural communities are not growing. They're either stagnant or they're shrinking. And that's a whole nother set of challenges you have to deal with. So I don't want to sit on here like, man, growing is a real pain in the butt. And it's a challenge, just like shrinking and dying and stagnancy is a challenge. So
yeah, it's a dance.
It's a dance.
It's a dance. I think for me, when we talk about future, it's just all about intention. Like, what are we doing on purpose? And a lot of times it's so easy to think a good environment like this is on autopilot. That's why I think we're pretty good. People always kind of defend themselves, and we don't always want to be negative or rain on a parade. Sometimes you got to step back and be like, man, we are amazing. Like you said, this is one of the best cities in the history of the world, right? Not even just the world right now, in the history of the world. You need all of that, but you got to be clear-minded and be thoughtful about how you're pushing things forward and not just leave things the way they are and hope that they stay that way, because when the world is getting more complex, if you are not getting better, you are getting worse.
How do you manage through these things? I think, again, bigger, better is not always the way, right? Again, as a business, you can choose to pause and say, we're not going to grow for a year because we want to get excellent at the things that we're doing. We're in that space now. Again, is when I was in corporate America, I knew what it was like to operate a $10 million operation under this big umbrella of a juggernaut. That was much easier. Building a million-dollar business now, a multi-million-dollar business, is a whole different thing. There's no blueprint that I've went to school for that. And so pausing at the appropriate pace to say, are we doing this on purpose with intention? We joke all the time, getting the emails, hey, can you use 60 more clients a month? We can scale your business. Like, we are growing appropriately based off of what we desire at this space. Obviously, you don't always get that luxury as a community because you don't get to say, okay, no more people in for a minute so we can get good at these type of things. There's ongoing challenge, and I echo what Vani says about that level of intentionality. So from somebody who obviously has been leading our community over these last, 4, 5, 6 years, obviously there's a fine dance of getting people to participate in that, obviously from the city council, from the citizens, et cetera. That's got to be frustrating to a degree of how people, they just want this shiny thing. They love the amenities. Downtown is happening right now. They want all the good without the bad. Yeah. How do you approach that fine balance of that? Because there's no right answer to it, but it's just saying this is the best approach of how we know how to do it right now, because there's no blueprint that you have at this space.
There's natural byproducts of growth. So, in Sioux Falls, for instance, we grew by, 13,000, 14,000 people in the last couple of years. Well, we average like 5 violent crimes per 1,000 residents, okay? Mm-hmm. That's not high, it's pretty normal. I can find communities that are way worse, find a few communities that are better, but not many. So if you think about that, 5 violent crimes per 1,000 people. So if you grow by 10,000 people, mm-hmm. that's 50 more violent crimes you're gonna have. So people will say, dude, we gotta slow down this growth. Crime is running rampant. I'm like, well, crime is still the same per capita. It's just, yeah, there's more because there's more people, but there's more everything. There's more sales tax revenue. There's more people driving on the streets. There's more people flushing their toilets. Like there's more of everything. Mm-hmm. It's when those per capita numbers start to get skewed, and it's like, well, instead of 5 per thousand, now we're up to 6 or 7 or 8. It's like, okay, now you have a crime problem. Mm-hmm. But what we have, you know, as a community grows, you have different perspectives, broadening perspectives on different topics, different ideas. Sioux Falls is probably a good snapshot of America. I mean, in terms of the increasing diverse makeup, in terms of Republican, Democrat, we're about 50-50. Yeah, I mean, so we're kind of a snapshot of America. So issues come up that you have to navigate through as you grow, you know, and we were talking off air about mm-hmm. cannabis, mm-hmm. you know, and medicinal marijuana and recreational marijuana, and it's a hot topic, and that's a byproduct of growth. A community's growing, the country's growing, policies on that are growing. So my role as a leader is to say, okay, how do I implement or not implement, fight or allow something like this in the community? What's the good, what's the pro, what's the con? And Bonnie, I know you have thoughts on that in terms of, you know, not that topic specifically, which I know you do, but just yeah. growth in general and some of those things that happen and some of the policies that come with it.
It's just a thought process for me that really scares me. And I'll give you 2 examples, cannabis and our prison system. So cannabis is scary for me in the sense of how we approach the conversation, whether is it a good thing or a bad thing, versus whether or not it's a real thing, versus a thing that we're going to have to deal with. People think about only in the nature of do we do it or not do it versus do we do it well. It's one of those things, if I look at somebody and I say, okay, historically, how do we judge a success of a thing? If we think about the war on drugs, and I don't even mean it from like what people would perceive as liberal concepts. Let's take it from what people might consider to be conservative concepts, which is fiscal responsibility, the sanctity of the family, you know, leadership and community, all of those different type of things. If we were to evaluate like the war on drugs, for instance, and the amount of people that are put into prison, that we generally house at twice the cost that we educate, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. When even in our community where we have fairly low recidivism on the whole, it's still almost 50%, which is kind of nuts if you think about the success of that situation. So when we think about the expense and the cost of it, how many families have been broken up? How many things for in many cases, nonviolent offenses? And so when we think about that and we think about what we should do about it, a lot of times it's not, the conversation doesn't happen in a place of logic or outcomes, that there's less people who die from this thing than having vending machines fall on them versus sugar, fat, coffee, virtually anything, you know what I mean? And it's listed as schedule narcotic. These things just don't make sense at all based on the results or the outcomes. You take prisons, a lot of times I'll talk to leaders and I'll say, what part of our prison system or our justice system are you proud of? And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, what part are you proud of? I said, because when I talk to the people on the street, they don't seem to be super happy with it, police or people, defense attorneys or prosecutors, COs or POs, wardens or, you know, school teachers or people who are dealing with reentry. No one's super happy with it. So why are we fighting so hard to keep it like this? We talk about having a new prison here in Sioux Falls. Do I want a new prison? Absolutely not. Because when you make more beds, you fill more beds. That's just the desire to do that. At the same time, when you have a prison, if I were to ask you to design a place where you could address the issues that would lead someone to prison, no matter what you would came up with, it would be the opposite of prison. If I slid you a piece of paper and I said, develop something that's going to heal the pain, the absence of leadership, of a parent, of lack of education, resources, or any of those other type of things. And I said, create a place that dealt with this. You would never create that. So if we build another prison, do we have another opportunity to build it correctly? So no, do I want another prison? No, I don't want another prison. Do I want a well-built prison that really rehabilitates people and keeps them out and allows them to be contributors to society? Absolutely. And so it's not as simple as just this or that. It's doing the thing well. If I talk to somebody about cannabis and I said, do you think there's any scenario with 30 some states that have medical or recreational or both that we don't end up where we are recreational? No, everybody knows we're going to end up there. Okay, so why aren't we figuring it out? Why would we be the last people to figure it out? Why would we let other states develop an economic advantage over us with their infrastructure and how they teach for something we know is going to happen inevitably? And why aren't we good at it? We have some of the best horticulturalists in the world that are losing their farms every other year. You know, and their kids don't want to take it over because it's such a hard, you know. So it's those type of things that I think don't actually happen because we don't get past the sensational nature right. of the conversation.
So counterpoint to that.
Yes.
So as you know, as a guy who has to lead the city through a variety of opinions on topics like this,
sure.
There's those opinions, and then there's people who will say, we have, yeah, there's 30 states that have legalized, and we have
sure.
a track record in Colorado, which has shown violent crime issues that have been resolved, black market issues that have been resolved. You know, in Oregon, that has basically decriminalized drug use, and they've tripled their overdose deaths in the last 3 years. And so that isn't getting it right either. So I think the challenge is you have growth, and you just have more. In a sinful world, you have more vices. There's just sure. vices. And Sioux Falls is, we're a poster child for vices in a, I'm not against the industry, but video lottery. Pick on that. We have how many video lottery casinos? I don't even know. Mm-hmm. You can't swing a cat without hitting a video lottery mm-hmm. casino in this community. And we have tons of vices. And they're good. They bring in revenue for the state. They bring in a lot of money. But we also then, as a community, have to realize, okay, we have to live with some of the challenges that some vices
for sure.
create. So most people can manage them correctly and can manage vices correctly. You got the 10% of the population that can't. And then society, oftentimes government, is pointed to say, hey, fix this problem that we created mm-hmm. By not doing it right on the front end. So I think your point's a good one in that we just want to make sure when we introduce anything, whether it's a prison or a new vice or something, that we're doing it in a way that in 10 years from now, we're like, man, I wish we had done that better and more efficiently, and because we can't unring that bell. And so I kind of like that we're not early adopters in a lot of things in South Dakota, because I can see, all right, that's what they're trying to do in Oklahoma City, and that's not working there. We're talking about recreational and medicinal. That's what they're doing here. So I'll gladly be late to the game on it, and if it allows us to learn as we grow.
Well, I think that's for me is, whether it's these topics or any of the other ones, with growth is going to come a whole lot of new and things we haven't experienced yet to date, right? And so it's, are we learning to prepare for? Because a lot of topics, it's almost like, again, it's either or. Versus, again, are we actively preparing for the inevitable? Some of these things we know is inevitable, and yet when you don't see people preparing for, what is that going to be like when? The reality is 10 years from now, we're going to arrive in a time and a place. How do we want to arrive there? And when you talk about introducing new things, especially to a community who has historically been, I would call it a little bit more conservative, our state more conservative, and things that just haven't experienced. And so when you grow in diversity, you grow in different things, you grow in some of these current impediments, there's no way for people to get really experienced in that. But there doesn't seem, going back to a couple episodes ago, when we talk about Civitas, active engagement, there doesn't seem to be enough people actively engaging in finding out more. So there's a lot of opinions, but it's based off a lot of ignorance.
That part.
Yeah.
That
and,
part.
Bingo. And what's cool about this, even this conversation is, like, political spectrum, like, we're different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But community, we're the same.
For sure.
We want the best for the community.
100%.
And so conversations where people disagree on an issue, sit down at a table and could talk about something that they maybe have differing philosophies on, that's an increasingly lost art form.
For sure.
But even what you just talked about with prison design and so forth, like, there's no guy in the city that wants a better prison design than we have right now. And and like, what we're doing isn't working. And all we can do is look at our track record and say, this ain't working, okay? So we've got years of history to say, this is not working.
That.
So we can either learn from that and pivot and maybe build a facility that will better with the resources. Now, this isn't just a facility, it's a system, you know,
yes,
that will better rehabilitate these guys. Or we can build another building with no services that's just going to release people without the right skills. They're just going to be released out of a shinier building.
Yes.
You know, and that.
That part. And that's my whole deal is how. Like, even on these, I'm not even convinced that we don't agree. And what I mean by that is it's just those very nuanced differences that we never get to. Like, there's a difference between being late and being a laggard. There's a difference between, or being patient and just not engaging. There's a difference between letting it be a free fall or whatever. Just to cite Denver real quick, go back to that. That's an example. Black market is huge. Why? Because you got to pay more for the regular stuff. Why? Because it's taxed to be prohibitive. It's not meant to work. You know what I'm saying? It was done in a way to make sure that it didn't work. The result of that is it don't work. You know? And so what I'm saying is that when you come at it, not from a perspective of I feel this way or I feel that way about it, but to say, if we were to do it, if the people said we're going to do it or whatever, what is the excellent way to do it? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to do it? What's the way to do it that doesn't cannibalize our people? What's the best way to do it that doesn't prevent business from being reputable? What is the best way to do it that pours back into our community and lets make oversized investments that get us a return that can't be matched by almost anything else, which is why most of these places that money goes to education. That's what I'm talking about, being excellent. So many people, even going back to prisons, when we think about that stuff, we think about it in a punitive nature. We can't let these people get away with it. No, we can't let them out not being better. That's what we can't do. You know what I mean? And so it's one of those things where, and even how we think about victims in that case. A lot of people think justice is what you do to the offender versus what you do for the offended. Mm-hmm. The way we have the conversation is in these narrow kind of caricature-ish ways. You do the crime, you do the time. Instead of thinking like, how do we get said human to be the best version of said human to come back and not only contribute, but contribute in a way that can restore some of what this person disrupted in their previous version of who they were. Those type of things. How are we best in class at these things versus let's not deal with it till we have to, which is always gonna be worse when you deal with things when you have to. It's always more expensive, it's always more challenging, and you don't have the thing you need, which is time.
I think about going back to one of the original comments about when we run in a business, we can pause. We can pause. And what did you do when you paused? You had time to reevaluate. Okay, we need to get better here. Let me find out who's the skilled leader who I can bring in the organization that can help me do that thing, or I can outsource these things, right? So how do we learn from, we're doing that right now in our business as we continue to grow and grow in different sizes, all that type of stuff. We're asking, how do we add the right talent? In that same space, and we look at growth from a community, and again, where I've only obviously lived in Sioux Falls, but I've studied a lot of communities in that, to Vani's point, if we wait till it's too late, you're running behind your tail, if you would. How do we see those things of the impediments that we know is coming at 250,000 people, the impediments that we know comes with 300,000, 500,000 people? So again, we continue to make, you know, some of these best places to live, which again, I agree Sioux Falls is the best place on earth. I could choose to live anywhere, and I choose to be here. However, knowing that, how do we rank? What is our KPI when it comes to prison system? What is our KPI when it comes to homelessness?
Our KPI.
Yeah, well, the hard stuff, right? And in that hard stuff, like if that was our business measurements, and to say, okay, your success, and if CEO, mayor, CEO of a company, if our raise or our getting fired or not depended upon how we were great in the things that almost no community is great at, how do we get there and get more people to then participate? Because again, you can't, no one person can do it all, but similar to a business, you would hire in or develop the right leaders within your organizations to help lead homelessness better or help lead those type of things. Because that's what we're, to me, managing growth in a business, we do it by way of developing and getting better leaders. We don't seemingly be having a farm system to develop better leaders to lead in these areas.
Yeah. And it's people will say to me, Paul, are you running City Hall like a business? And I say to them, if you believe in that phrase, you don't understand government or business, because you cannot run government like a business. I mean,
sure. If I was, you're fired.
Well, there's principles that apply, but a real example right now is we're trying to fine-tune a scorecard for the city. of metrics that we can look at any time of day, a snapshot, and see how the kind of the heartbeat of the city. Well, a lot of them are just trailing indicators, like what's our crime stats? And all that tells us is that's a trailing indicator of what's been happening with crime. Yes. What I want to know is, what's our crime stats going to look like in 18 months with juvenile crime so that I can work on some things now or today yes. to keep that flat? And those are very hard to do. So in business, I mean, you guys could say, hey, our goal is to, you know, 2x revenue in 3 years and grow this service line and we'll be a staff of 15. Well, you can be very intentional about that. You can charge the right prices. You can get rid of clients that you just don't like. Like, yep. I don't like this client. We're going to fire them and we're going to go after this one. When you got a city, you're like, I can't just annex that part of this. They're kind of a pain over there. They're expensive. They yeah. got no wastewater. I don't like the way these people think. We just want to get rid of them. We're going to triple taxes to get more revenue. It's like you're just very limited yeah. in how you can move the battleship. So what does it take? The growth takes people, Civitas, like we've talked about, to like work together to do that. And at the core of that, it's like leading and managing growth of a company. A core of that is coalition building. You have to, your company's growing, you got to build a coalition of your team to all believe the direction you're headed as a company. Because if they're not buying what you're selling, you're not going to get there. So on a macro level, that's a city. If the city does not believe in the direction that the community is going, that the leadership is taking them, they're not going to be on board. And they're going to riot, and they're going to protest, and they're going to send nasty emails, mm-hmm. and you're not going to get reelected and all these things. Because they don't believe in you. So managing growth is listening to the totality of mm-hmm. the team, listening to different perspectives and saying, okay, how can we meld all those together to move the community forward, you know, in the right way?
Well, that's why we're just so bullish on leadership, because like in my mind, I want to be developing. Think about how many people are coming into positions. 10,000 boomers are leaving the workforce every day. This is the greatest changeover of wealth, power, and responsibility the world has ever seen, okay? In a very short order, Putin is not going to be there. Biden is not going to be there. So-and-so is not going to, globally, those people aren't going to be there. Major organizations are not going to be there. Think about how many people are going to these organizations without having any real historical context of how they became to be or really any understanding of those things. I want to develop our warden from 20 years from now so you understand how all these things work. Sending teenagers to go see these different things. I want our drug czar to be somebody who was raised in that thing, who really understands the rates and the impacts and this thing versus that thing, and knows the difference between this drug and that drug and what this one does and that one does, which most people don't. They got really passionate opinions, but they know nothing about it, especially if you reclaim a person who doesn't participate in those things. I want to develop these folks from a younger age so we can educate them and they can have open dialogue. But because we talk about these things, they're so stickish. They're one-liners. They're, nope, I'm not doing it because blah, blah. And they're not real dialogues. And so we have a group of people who in the world that are inundated with information that's not coming from their parents, not coming from the people who are responsible for them. It's coming from all other parts of the world, and it's not being contextualized to our community because we're not having these conversations in a dynamic way. It's just one of those things where I'm the church, I can't be for this. I'm the police, I can't be for that. I'm this, I can't be for that. I can't, what are we talking about? If the world worked that simple, where you could just slice, like you said, you can't just cut the, you know it's there. What are you talking about? Yeah. It's those type of things. So for me, I want to develop just the most educated, plugged in, connected group of individuals that come up together that have a singular mission of improving their community and their world together. Holy cow. Holy cow. That's what I mean. No matter what the subject is, none of this stuff is going to be great to talk about it and everything, but like using our brains.
Yeah.
Using our brains.
I think the biggest barrier to getting to that place, Vani, I mean, there's two things. One is people buying into political ideologies. Okay. So, and as a political guy, I mean, there are certain things you believe if you're an R and you believe if you're a D. Yeah. The second thing is, and this is a guy who, I got on Twitter in 2007. I started a social media company in 08. We would have what we called tweet ups. and TweetUps were meetups for people who were on Twitter in Sioux Falls because there were so few of us. And we go to a bar and we have a tweet up because, like, oh, you're on Twitter too. Hey, great to meet you in person. And did you know there's this RT? What's RT? Well, it stands for retweet. Oh, what happens? Well, you hit it and it goes to,
for sure, aging yourself.
I know I am. So it pains me to say the second thing that's a problem is social media. And social media has created an echo chamber of beliefs that don't allow people to think any other way than what their content feed is telling them to think.
Yeah.
And I love social media in a lot of ways. I built a whole career around it. I use it to communicate. But in some ways, it has created such a closed-minded society that I believe what I believe because everybody in my feed believes this, yeah. And I'm not even going to think. And they're getting fed stuff that 90% of the time is not even true or accurate or realistic. Yeah.
Let me give you this real quick. So we were talking to some teachers and one of our leaders of tomorrow that we do for educators. And one of them was like, we got to get rid of these phones. These phones are distracting kids and they're dangerous and they da 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 da. And I was talking to her and I was like, see, that's my thing.
That's not going
to
happen.
But, well, here's the thing. We're like, I always tell young people, this is the only time in your life that the world is going to suspend its expectations of you so that you can learn, grow, and develop. After that, you out here in the world with real go-getters like me, and I'll eat your lunch. Like, so you better get your stuff together before you get out here, because I really do this. And I'm telling them, and I was telling this teacher, I was like, well, why would we cast this thing out in the one place tasked to teach them? Think about it. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. We know they have the phones. Mm-hmm. We know they're going to get on the phones. We know they're going to do all these other type of things. But the place where we teach them, we don't teach them about how to use their phone. We don't teach them about how to fact check. We don't teach them about how to have that dialogue. We don't teach them how to counter. We don't teach them how to shut off. We don't teach them how to pace. We don't teach them how to process. We put it in your pocket, put it in your desk, put it in your locker. We don't want to see it. Cool. You cannot see it. They can text under the table, man. And so for me, it's one of those things where it's like, we think that if we don't see it or if we cast it away, it's gone and we don't have to deal about it. Instead of actually intellectually dealing with it, even if what we end up having to do isn't what we would like to do, we would like to not deal with it. But that's not on the table. So sans that being on the table, what's the best version we have? The best version we have is to teach you how to use it well. People love telling you that guns don't kill people. They don't feel that way about anything else. They don't feel that way about anything else. How we use the things in our lives, all of those vices, all of those whatevers, because, hey, me and you do $20 on a football game, cool. I put it into a slot machine, not so cool. Hey, me and you have 6 drinks together. I drive home. You know, you got a good chunk of the people in the city that have DUIs. We do those. You know what I mean? You sitting in the park, sleeping on the bench because you smoke weed. Not a good thing. It's just not a realistic way of processing through these issues so that we come out of it better. That's really what my focus is on. And when we talk about the future that I just hope to help participate in designing is just one where we don't see trapdoors and enemies. We see realities that we have to deal with. And we come into it clear-minded to get the best result we can possible. Because why wouldn't we?
Yeah. my final 3 points on this of how do you manage growth and get ahead of it, A, is just taking the time to have a vision of what that looks like for yourself. Like, what is the best version of Sioux Falls future-wise 10 years from now? Because we spend so much time trying to get people to buy into the now. Again, I was telling a good friend of mine recently, like, I'm pulling out almost a lot of this stuff here because I'm done trying to convince people amongst my peer group. I'm going to start with this next generation to start to help them vision what that can be. So when I have a clear vision of what I think that is, my second point is live your highest truth. That's one of my mantras. If just pause. I don't care whatever political race you're in, whatever religion in, whatever your highest ideals are, just live those out. Let me see them every day, right? If you lived your highest truth, which will lead to the third one, you teach through the clarity of your example. And so in this, we see this firsthand all the time. When we ask people in training, would your kids sign up to live the life that you're currently living? Less than 3% of people raise their hands, and we actually deal with high school kids, and they can confirm less than 3% of them actually want their parents'
wow,
lives.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, handily. So again, this next generation may not know what they want, but they're very clear on what they don't want. Yeah. What they see when they see us too tired to come home, then they see their parents disengaging from complaining all day versus doing a thing. My girls are seeing firsthand active participation, right? And so therefore, they don't have an opinion without a suggestion or even action in that. And so, teaching through the clarity of your example, I'm very opinionated on what I believe. But I'm not going to tell you about it. I'm going to show you by way of the results. Look at the results I'm getting, right? And so I think that's my opinion of how we truly manage growth and get ahead of it. In that, when we start to do that and look at this next generation, that's where my focus is going in and mentoring the next generation, the high schools, the college age, because at 44, knowing that my tethering to the next generation is quickly diminishing, how can I grab that now 16 to 26 year old and start to develop a couple dozen Tamians? If I can do that, I'll have more people that will actively participate to step into these various roles. And so that's my last opinion on how do we manage growth and get ahead of it, is those character traits.
I think managing growth, I mean, just to put a cherry on it, recognizing it, confronting it's happening, and not saying, oh, this social media, wish we would go away from this, it's ruining our kids. Well, it's happening, it's here. So let's say, and gosh, I sound like such an old fart right now.
Get off my lawn!
Kind of, you know, but understanding how we use it for positive change. So it's a burden of leadership. It'll always be around. It's always be something we'll have to deal with. So that's another episode. Thanks, guys. Like and subscribe and comment on the screen and wherever you're listening to this.
Well, timing, tact, and delivery in these comments, y'all. We're going to be productive about the situation because, again, we would love to use this to fill another season, to create dialogues, and to really teach people how to have those conversations and participate in Civitas in our beautiful community.
Amen, brother. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on The Burden of Leadership. Bye-bye.